This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. April is World Autism Month, a time to talk about issues faced by individuals on the autism spectrum and their families. Today, we'll take a look at the resources available for autistic children and their families in the La Crosse area, how public schools and private organizations are meeting these needs, and what more is needed as more children are diagnosed with autism. We're here with Carrie Zilke, director of the Chilita Development and Learning Center, Susan Justman, a parent of a child with autism from Minneapolis, and Dr. Doug Sullivan, a parent of a child with autism from La Crosse. Carrie, can you start by talking about what kind of services Chilita provides to children with cognitive and behavioral challenges?
Sure. Well, Chilita is a school and home for kids and youth ranging from age 7 to 21 with autism and other complex behavioral challenges. We service kids from all over the United States. Primarily, we service kids in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, but we have had students from Hawaii, Florida, California, all over the United States. The students that come to us receive very individualized program. It's not, you know, here's a box, everybody has to fit into this program. It's what is best for that child. What are the goals that the parent wants for that child in order for them to be independent? What are the goals that we feel are necessary for this child to grow in our program? So very individualized as far as behavior goals, education goals, living skills, and we constantly get input from the parents, input from the team, input from everybody involved, just to create the best program for that child.
And could you talk a little bit about how Chilita maybe kind of works with the public education system and or maybe kind of fills needs that are not maybe met by the public education system?
Sure. So we also have a day school portion of our program. So students from the surrounding area come for school. We have 10 special ed teachers on staff. The classroom size is about 5 to 7 kids, with one teacher and 3 to 4 direct support staff. We're still very involved with the school district, so the school district is at all of the meetings, constant contact with them, making sure that those goals are attainable, making sure that we're meeting those education goals that is decided by the team. So a lot of collaboration between the school, the family, the child, even if the child is able to give some input into what goals they would want. So it's a very, you know, team-oriented process to help that child meet their needs.
Yeah, and I mean, when is it an appropriate situation for Chilita to kind of assist in that role of a kid who it was in the, you know, public school system?
We would get referral from the school. So the school will contact us if they're having behavior problems with the child. Typically, the students that come to Chilita are those that have very significant behaviors that are interfering with their education needs or their life skill needs. So they would refer their child to us, explain types of behaviors that they're seeing, and we would develop a program around that, look at some behavior modification approaches. Because if you're not regulated enough with your behaviors, you're not going to be able to focus on academics. You're not going to be able to focus on life skills. So really taking a look at that behavior approach, do some behavior modification in order for them to be successful.
And so we're here today to talk about autism. And I wonder if you could share maybe what percentage of kids in Chilita have autism.
Oh, goodness. I would say probably about 80%. A lot of the students that come to Chilita are dual diagnosed. It's not just autism spectrum disorder as a diagnosis. There could also be some attention deficit disorder, some dysregulated mood disorder. It's kind of like they've tried everything possible in the school districts. They tried everything possible in the home, but they're just not able to provide them that specific intense services that Chilita is able to provide.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the common challenges that come with an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. You know, what are the common needs of those kids?
I can speak on just my experience that I have working at Chilita. I don't know if Doug and Sue probably have a little bit more experience as being parents. But some typical characteristics of a person with autism, they just see things differently. They perceive things a little bit differently than we do. They interpret things different. They communicate different. So it's not so much that you can pinpoint a person that's on the spectrum. It's just they do things a little bit differently than we do. Maybe they need a little bit more time processing what you're asking them to do. maybe they don't understand feelings and how to express their feelings as well as we do. So that's when they may act out in a behavior. They may hit or throw something because they don't have those communication skills like you and I would to let somebody know we're upset, we're hurt, we're frustrated, we need something. So that behavior is communication.
Yeah, we'll kind of hear some of your personal stories. We'll start with you, Sue. Can you just kind of share about, you know, your experience, going through the education system with your child who has autism?
Oh, absolutely. He was officially diagnosed at age 2 and immediately was enrolled in early childhood special education through Minneapolis Public Schools in an autism-specific program. He has continued to receive support through the Minneapolis Public Schools in their autism program the whole way through, and it has been fantastic. He has also received all sorts of outpatient therapies. We've done a lot of behavioral modifications, but in his specific case, he's really not very verbal at all. So he would start to get really frustrated when he couldn't get words out. People didn't understand what he was saying or wanted. He couldn't even tell me if he was thirsty and wanted a glass of water. So basically his entire life is run by the people and his caregivers around him. As he got older, he started acting out a little bit more, hitting, tapping on windows, banging his head against the wall, just really looking for some sensory input. And then what happens when you're 10? Well, now when you're banging on a window, you're actually going to break it. Now when you have an iPad and you toss it, you're actually going to smash it. A lot of those types of behaviors started happening, both in school and in the home. We received more and more in-home help, people helping to take care of him on weekends and after school, but it really got to a point where it was basically ruining all of our lives, and first and foremost, his. He was absolutely miserable. He didn't want to go anywhere. We couldn't take him anywhere because I didn't know what he'd do if he'd run up to a stranger, hit them, pulled them to the ground by their hair. Just extremely, extremely unpredictable behavior. He also has a sister who's 2 years younger. He attacked her a couple times. We actually moved her out of our home, and then one parent stayed with one child in one location. The other parent stayed with the other child at the other house. So it really can drive you to some pretty extreme things, and you get to a point where even though we have all this help and all this support, we're still not getting him what he needs, which is where a place like Chilita comes in. And he's happy. I just saw him this morning. He's happy. He's smiling. I hadn't seen that in years.
So, you know, to have a child receive that diagnosis at a young age, I mean, I wonder what that process was like for you as a parent to try to access resources on how to best care for a child in that situation.
You know, I think it really kind of depends on where you live. The school district is, for us initially, the first and foremost support place. Then certainly the county starts to get in. When you're talking about some of the behaviors that I was just describing that my son developed as he got older, then very much that's when it's time for a county case manager and really help to unlock some doors for you and figure out what specific resources your child would probably qualify for, as well as really getting a very, very specific diagnosis. So then you can realize, okay, a place like Chilita absolutely should be on the table for us. And how do we go about accessing that?
Doug, we'll turn to you. I wonder if you could share a little bit about your experience kind of navigating the school system for your child.
Well, ours was quite a bit different. We were in Texas when our son was diagnosed, very similar to Sue's experience, pretty young challenges, and his developed with seizure disorders and other kinds of sensitivities and illnesses, and the cognitive delays came on real quickly after that, but it took us several years to achieve a diagnosis with that. And we did not have the support through our school district, and we had to seek most of that help on our own. So we had to learn how to navigate it from others that had been ahead of us and doing a lot of reading and honestly running into a lot of dead ends. And so most of that help came from privately sought resources on our own. The school district really didn't help us at all. In fact, many times we would remove him from the school for a couple of years at a time and get him into private placements. But as he got older, and again, some of the same things that Sue described, as he got bigger and harder to handle and violent. I always want to be careful when I say he was violent. He was violent as he was trying to express himself, as he was trying to deal with all the things that were going on inside of him, and he was not very verbal, and he couldn't tell us what his challenges were, but same things, you know, hitting windows and they would break, and iPads and they would break, and you know, people that we would get around and be afraid of how he would react with them. And then he has three siblings whom he also targeted. And so again, we had to seek a lot of private help because we just didn't have the public access, the counselors, the case managers, or what have you, to help us through that. So unfortunately, that was a lot different from your experience.
I'm sure that's very daunting to kind of not know where to go for resources, for help.
It really is. Honestly, I think we became desensitized to it after a while because we just became used to finding our own way. And my wife and I spent hours and days and weeks and months, you know, looking at different avenues and directions, and many times they were false starts. We'd go a certain way with a certain therapy center that we found and discover it just wasn't making any difference. And you make friends with parents that are in these same situations, and everybody has various stories, and sometimes you have to be real careful where you seek your advice from, because you can get directed and misdirected in a lot of ways. And, you know, some of those misdirections cost us a lot of time and a lot of money. We sought help outside of our state many times. But we would pursue every direction that we were given, and many of them were good suggestions. You know, we did find a lot of help, but we had to go far outside of where we lived many times. It was daunting. It was hard, but we just dedicated ourselves to taking care of our son.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're taking a look at local resources for children with autism and their families. We're here with Dr. Doug Sullivan, a parent of a child with autism from La Crosse, Sue Justman from Minneapolis, another parent, and Carrie Zilke from the Chilita Development and Learning Center. Doug, you mentioned money, and I just wonder if you mind sharing the financial toll that can sometimes take on a family to try to access these resources for children with autism.
I have on purpose never put a calculator to it. I can't even tell you a confident estimate. Hundreds of thousands of dollars that we have spent seeking help and in therapies and in support people in our home and whatnot. And very little of it was covered by any kind of insurance plans or benefits that we had. In fact, we even sought help along the way from family members who are in a fortunate position to be able to lend a hand, or it probably would have sunk us financially.
Yeah, and Sue, I wonder if you also were faced with financial challenges when it comes to trying to access resources for your son.
Oh, absolutely. You know, these programs aren't free in Minnesota. There's kind of a sliding scale, pay what you can. But the fact is, yes, we've put our son through Harvard several times, I think, over through this process. You also find things where he would really bond with a caregiver, someone who would take care of him on the weekends. In order to keep that person, we would end up, you know, paying a lot extra. You really need to give some incentive for someone to want to say, hey, I'll give up my Saturday to take your son for 6 hours. I know he's probably going to try to hit me and it's going to throw things at me, but hey, I'll do it because I want to help, you know, you and your family. So with that comes a bit of a price tag.
With all these challenges, Carrie, I want to kind of transition to you. I know that Chilita has started a new program to try to help parents better kind of navigate what it looks like to be a caregiver to a child with autism. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the Development and Learning Center.
Sure. So the Development and Learning Center started out from seeing return students and hearing the stories of the parents struggling. Our average length of stay is about 2.5 years. So during that 2.5 years where the child is with us, you know, the parent is able to come when they can. You know, some parents are able to come every week, some maybe once a month, maybe once a year. It just really depends on the distance from where they live to Chilita. But during that time, you know, and Sue and Doug can probably speak better than this, they really don't get the skill building that they need to help their child. So when they take the child home for a home visit or a day visit, they just want to spend time with their child. And going back to Chilita, then we had the skill building, we had the treatment plans that we're working on, the behavior modification. So when it comes time to transition home or time to transition to a group home, the parents don't have that knowledge that we have when we've been working with that child for a couple years. And what we found is sometimes those kids go home and they regress. They go back to displaying those behaviors that caused them to come to Chilita. And, you know, there's a story of a child who was with us for a couple of years, and she struggled a lot behaviorally. And we knew that she wasn't ready to transition out, but the county wanted her to go home. Mom even said, I can't. I'm not ready for her. I need help. I need support. And, you know, the county would say, well, when she comes home, we can have a team go in and we can assess to see what is needed. And we're thinking, okay, there's a whole gamut of supports that she needs in order for her to go home and be successful. Well, this child ended up going home. The parent was saying, I'm not ready to take her home. The last I heard is mom gave up rights for her. And this child was in and out of treatment foster home, 7 or 8 different foster homes, and juvenile detention. So you have this parent who is saying, I cannot support my child without additional supports. And the county is saying, well, we don't have anything yet. So that's kind of where the Development and Learning Center came into play, thinking, what can we do? What supports can we provide that parent? What training can we provide that parent so that child can be successful? Because we don't want the child to regress. We've worked very hard over those 2 years to get them to a good spot, and we want to transfer that training and that knowledge to the parents or the aftercare place they're going to.
So what does that training look like? Is there, you know, can you give an example of what that might look like?
It's a wide variety of things. Just recently, we had a student transition to a group home, and so we sent a couple staff with them for 4 days, and we had them train from 7 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. So they were training the new staff on how to work with this child, because you can read about the person, you can read the behavior plan, you can read all the recommendations on what you can do to work with that person, but they're a person. And that relationship piece is huge. You have to build a relationship with anybody in order to be successful. So we were able to send a couple staff member to help transfer that relationship and to help teach all the different things. Oh, you know, if she starts saying these words, she's going to do this behavior. Or, you know, this is what she does to show us that she's happy or that she's enjoying something because she was a nonverbal person. So that's just one service that we can provide.
Doug, I kind of see you, you know, over here nodding your head in agreement. I wonder if, you know, these issues of, you know, trying to work against regression and sort of work against losing some of these progress is familiar to you.
Extremely familiar. We know that story. Yeah. We know that story really well. When we finally brought our son here to Chilita, we brought him from Texas, and it's funny how life works. This is my hometown. I grew up here and moved away and lived in Texas for nearly 20 years, but when we really finally realized we need help, and we need a lot more help than what we can find here, we began looking all over the country, and I mean, pretty quickly it was obvious that Chilita was a place that we needed to get Keegan to, so we brought him here. And we had Keegan in Chilita for 16 months, and he did fantastic. I mean, everything Carrie talked about, all the relationship building and the constant structured direction, and so many of his behaviors came under control, and we saw so much progression with him that we just weren't able to get in what is a pretty chaotic home with 3 other siblings and 2 working parents and everything else. And it was amazing what he achieved. And honestly, we finally ran out of money. And so we had to bring him back to Texas. Chilita helped with a great transition plan as best as we possibly could, but we weren't really going back to anything. There was no support back at home, so we prepared ourselves as best as we could, and there was a day school that he was in. But it was obvious pretty quick when we got back home that that regression was beginning, and it was maybe 6-7 months, and we really saw most of it backtrack. And that's what really prompted us to say, we just don't have the means to do this on our own. There's not enough people that we can bring into our home or educate in the day schools that are trying so hard to help. And we lost a lot of that. And so that was the decision that we made to bring him back. Best decision we ever made. But yeah, it's not just something that you do once and then it sticks. I mean, with kids like these, you have to keep them in that structured environment.
Sue, I wonder what your experience and maybe just your reaction to hearing the possibility of more formal training on, you know, how to be a caregiver for a child with autism. Is that something that, I don't know, maybe you wish you would have had access to when you were starting this journey?
It would have been fantastic because, yes, the team building, really getting to know kind of, okay, how is it that they handle him? For the longest time, I never understood that when he gets off the school bus, I should stand behind him. Because otherwise, if I walk in front of him, he's going to rip me down to the ground by my hair. I mean, things like that are the really basic things. It's like, oh, that would make life a little bit easier, you know, kind of how to stay out of his way, how to manage. I mean, the idea of him coming home actually would terrify me at this point because I don't have any of the skill sets, the things that they're doing at Chelita. We can't replicate in our home right now. He will probably transition to a group home, so it won't be a case where he will be coming back to our actual house, but getting him out of Chelita, that's our number one fear, is that he will regress unless we're able to take everything that he has learned and apply it in his new living situation.
Yeah, Carrie, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about just kind of the goals for, you know, helping. The goals that you are setting kind of at Chelita are kind of lifetime goals, mm-hmm. of helping these individuals be successful adults too.
Each individual has their own goals. You know, autism spectrum disorder is a spectrum. You have those that are on the lower functioning side that maybe need help, you know, with toileting, washing their hands, brushing their teeth, even just eating, all the way up to the higher spectrum where it's more the socialization, communication skills. So the goal is to move to a lesser restrictive environment. Chelita is very restrictive. It's very structured. It's very, you know, individualized, intense services. And the goal is for either that child to go home, go to a group home, maybe even live on their own. You know, we had one child who was with us for, I want to say, 6 or 7 years, and his lifelong goal was to be a chef. He wanted to be a chef. And he was at the higher functioning level where he was able to take care of himself, but that socialization piece just wasn't there. When he was discharged, there was a school that he went to, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a college for individuals with Asperger's. And he was able to go and get the skills that he needed to be able to cook for himself. So it's, what is the goal for that child based off of what the parent wants for that child? What does that child want for themselves? And looking at what we can do to help them meet those goals the best that we can.
And so have you had parents or other family members enroll in the Development and Learning Center so far? What has kind of been the interest?
There's been a lot of interest talking to parents, talking to even school districts. There's been a lot of interest in it. And it's in the development stage right now. You know, the child that we transitioned last week, that was one of the first couple that we did. We have another child that could possibly be transitioning in about a month. And so we're talking about what can we do to help provide that transition service and that education service for that family, because the goal is for him to go home. He was also a repeat person. He went home, and within a week, he was back at Chelita because he did not do well at home. The goal is for him to go home again. So we're going to meet with the parent, meet with the county, and say, okay, what services can we provide so that child can be successful in your home?
I know that part of this program received a grant from the state, the Department of Children and Families, to be able to set up this Development and Learning Center. And, you know, I wonder how maybe this model that Talita is developing for parents could serve for, you know, helping other caregivers learn skills to be an effective family caregiver.
Right. So we got the grant for relative caregiver support groups because, you know, there are some grandparents out there that are supporting children with autism, and there are maybe some siblings that are supporting their own sibling. Again, I can't speak as far as a support group. I don't know if Doug and Sue would speak on that too, but it's different, I guess, if you're not a parent of a child with autism. You really don't know the struggles that a person is going through. So having that support group, I think, is very important. So that's one thing that we want to do as part of the Development and Learning Center, is set up those support groups. Sib shops, so siblings that have, children that have a sibling on the spectrum or a cognitive disability, have them come together with other siblings. So they have that peer group, that support group that they can talk to and maybe get to know and support each other. Also, another idea that we've talked about too is training businesses on how to support families when their child is at their business, whether it is, you know, at a restaurant sitting down or going to the grocery store. If business owners are more aware of what they can do to help support a child or support a family, maybe those families would be more willing to go to that business. You know, if a parent is struggling with a child and people are staring at them, I mean, that can probably be very daunting and very uncomfortable. But if you have a business who is very supportive and understanding and willing to work with that parent, I think that just makes the whole awareness piece and inclusion piece a lot better for this community.
Yeah, Doug, I mean, as a parent to other, you know, children, your child has siblings. I mean, how do you kind of go about equipping them to, you know, kind of understand your son's needs and, you know, what they can do as siblings?
Well, that's a daunting task, too. There's not a path for that. There's not an instruction sheet for that. One thing I have learned, having brought three other children up in the home along with our son, is kids are resilient, and they'll figure it out. And when they see mom and dad trying to make it work, and when it's the only thing they know, because it's all they knew, you know, they kick in and help. Every child with autism is different, so I'm sure every struggle is different. In our household, we had safe words, and we had safe locations, and we had inside jokes about things that would happen that I think others would look at us and think we were completely crazy. you have to laugh, or I don't even want to think of the alternative. But to have, you have to realize that this doesn't just affect the autistic child, and it doesn't just affect the mom and the dad in the home. It affects those kids. And I mean, even to this day, and our son's been out of the home now for 4 to 5 years, we still have lots of things we deal with my youngest daughter and helping her navigate through some of those fears and understanding of what happened in our home, now that she especially gets to see homes that aren't like this, and she realizes how very different our home was. However, neat things happen too, because she is already saying, I want to be somebody who does special education when I grow up. So I think these siblings are going to become the next round of caregivers for people like this.
Doug Sullivan is a parent of a child with autism from La Crosse. He's here with us today to talk about the challenges faced by children with autism and their families. He's joined by Carrie Zilke, director of the Talita Development and Learning Center, and Sue Jessman, a parent of a child with autism from Minneapolis. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation in light of World Autism Month. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. April is World Autism Month, and we're taking a look at the challenges and opportunities for children with autism and their families in the La Crosse area. As Governor Tony Evers calls for increased funding for special education programs in the state, public schools and private organizations in the La Crosse area are finding new ways to serve autistic students and their families. We're here with Carrie Zilke, director of the Toledo Development and Learning Center, Susan Justman, a parent of a child with autism from Minneapolis, and Dr. Doug Sullivan, a parent of a child with autism from La Crosse. You know, as I mentioned, Carrie, we have seen Governor Evers call for new investment in special education in public schools in our state. He wants to increase funding by about $600 million. And obviously, Cholita is a private school, but I wonder, out of curiosity, if that sort of investment in special education programs, how that would affect Cholita?
Well, along with the Development and Learning Center and, you know, helping out parents and giving parents the support, we also want to give schools some support. We do have some students that come for day services just because a special ed teacher isn't able to provide the services that that child needs just because maybe their behavior is a little bit more intense. But if we're able to go into schools and offer some training, offer some support and some suggestions, maybe that child can stay in the school, because we do want them to stay in the school, maybe be mainstreamed in some of the classes. So whatever services that we're able to provide to help that child is what our ultimate goal is.
Yeah, and I know that Cholita has provided some services recently to schools. I don't know if you mind sharing a few examples.
Sure. A couple weeks ago, we went to a school district that is struggling with some of the students in special education in being mainstreamed into the classroom. I'm not a teacher, so I don't understand what type of training they get, but I would assume regular ed teachers get a little bit different training than special ed teachers. So regular ed teachers just don't have the training necessary for working with a child with special needs. So we went and talked to a couple regular ed teachers and just gave a brief overview on behavior modification and the things that they can do to help include that child into the classroom. What can the other students in that classroom do to help that child feel included into the classroom? So it's just a very brief overview on what they can do for inclusion. We also offer services to school districts for one of our employees who is a board-certified behavior analyst to go into the school and do some observation of the child and come up with what's called an FBA or a functional behavior assessment, looking at the purpose of the behavior or the reasons that child is engaging in that type of behavior, and then coming up with recommendations on how the school can help support that child and how they can do some behavior modification, offer them training, just because maybe their behavior is a little bit more intense than what they're able to deal with. We're going to offer them the support and a behavior plan to help keep that child in that classroom.
You know, as we have seen the diagnoses of autism, you know, more cases of autism being diagnosed, do you feel like our education system has been able to keep up with this? Or do you think we'll continue to see more cases of teachers needing some extra help to kind of address these needs?
I think it's everybody. I think everybody needs a little bit more education. You can never have enough education. There's always new approaches coming up. There's new evidence coming out to show how you can maybe change some of your approaches with a child who has autism. So I don't think it's just one specific group that needs additional education. I think we all need additional education. And anything that we can do to collaborate to help parents, help children, I think is the best approach possible.
Yeah, Sue, I wonder, from your experience as a parent of a child with autism, if you ever felt, the wish for more people to kind of understand autism and the challenges that can come with that.
Certainly, anytime you go out into the public with a child with autism, you're basically setting yourself up for that, or more importantly, for our son, that people are going to be staring at him, kids are going to point. It would be nice if restaurants, you know, would have a little bit more understanding, or maybe some more sensory nights at places that kids his age are supposed to love. You know, a movie theater, well, guess what? That's not so fun for him. If they turn off the lights, if he's supposed to be quiet, he's not quiet. He makes noises. He does it all the time. Well, what if there was a sensory night where the lights stay on and it's kind of okay if people are getting up and wandering around during the new Disney movie? Just things like that that would allow him to participate in a few more quote-unquote normal kid activities.
Do you think we have seen more people paying attention to this need in our community?
I would say so. I mean, for the most part, people are pretty understanding when we go out with places with our son. I mean, they realize that he's a little different, that he makes some noises, that his behaviors, he's kind of twitchy and always touching things. So for the most part, I think people are fairly understanding.
Doug, I wonder what your thoughts are on this issue of the need for maybe more community education or, kind of encouraging community awareness about autism.
Well, I agree with what's already been said. I don't think there can ever be enough education here because, these people with autism, these children who are becoming adults, they're going to be with us for a while, and there's more coming until we figure that part out. They're going to be part of our community. So I think it's important that there is more community education and training, not just for teachers or not just caregivers, but for everyone, to understand that these children and these adults are a part of our society and can be a very productive part of our society, but aren't always going to conform to the rules that we would consider typical.
Doug, from your experience really exploring a lot of different avenues when trying to access resources for your son, and I wonder what your thoughts are on if we have seen resources and school systems keep up with this, just the, kind of growing number of cases of autism spectrum disorder in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. This is a very sort of narrow perspective, I guess, just from one person looking at it. But I will say I have seen so much more in the way of resources and effort and attention, especially in maybe the last 5 to 7 years. Are they keeping up? I don't know. I don't know. One thing that happens when you're a parent of an autistic child is your world gets very, very narrow around just what's going on with you. It's hard to pay attention and be as proactive as you like to be or be an activist like you'd like to be for that. So I don't know if we're keeping up. My gut says probably not yet. We probably don't have all of that figured out yet, but I've seen a lot more.
Yeah, Carrie, I mean, do we see enough advocacy around autism and just the need for maybe more funding or for more, resources around this area?
Well, funding, obviously, yes. I mean, there's never enough funding to help families and help individuals with autism or any other cognitive disability. But I do have to agree that we are moving a lot further than we have been in previous years, a lot more. Businesses are being open for helping individuals with autism. I know the La Crosse Wellness Center, they have adaptive sports groups. Central High School, they have adaptive sports groups. So I think people are more aware of what they can do to change their environment a little bit in order to meet the needs of what this child is. Instead of, just like I said, it's not a box. Everybody's not going to fit into this box. So what can we do to change our environment, adapt our environment in order to include everybody and have everybody involved in their community? So I do see a lot of growth in that area.
If there was a community space, a business, another organization that wanted to make their space more accessible to people with autism, what strategies would you suggest to that business owner or other leader?
First, understanding the needs of the child, understanding their sensory needs. Just like Susan said, some kids don't do well with the lights out. Some kids don't do well when it's really loud and chaotic. It's very overwhelming for them, very stressful for them. So their first indication may be just to leave the area or to cover their ears and scream. So I think knowledge is the biggest piece, and understanding and being open to change, being open to changing their environment to meet the needs of that family or that child, and flexibility, just because it works one day doesn't mean it's going to work the next day. So, you know, and meet with parents, talk to parents, find out from them what they would like from a grocery store or like from a business or like from a restaurant if they want to take their family out, you know, maybe not sitting in the corner or maybe having a different area for their child to go to when they start to feel overwhelmed. So knowledge is important, and then just asking questions on how they can support a family.
That's Carrie Zilke from the Chilita Development and Learning Center, here with us today to talk about the future of programs for children with autism. She's joined by Doug Sullivan, a parent of a child with autism from La Crosse, and Sue Justman, a parent of a child with autism from Minneapolis. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You know, Carrie, earlier you shared a little bit about the programs that are offered at Chilita, but I wonder if you could, if you mind sharing how unique Chilita is in kind of this space, or if there are other schools or you know, organizations like it.
Mm-hmm. We've been asked to open up a Chilita South. We've been asked to open up a Chilita North. We've been asked to replicate what we do in other states just because the need is so high for us. It's very individualized. I keep going back to that. It's looking at that child and saying, what do you need that we can help you with to be independent? What do your parents want as far as goals for you, and what can we do to help you with it? You know, our staff-to-student ratio is one staff to two kids. Sometimes it's a little bit higher just based off of the needs of that child. And it's not, here's your program, you're going to do the same thing for the next 2 years. It's, here's your program, let's work it and make changes as we need to based off of the change in that child. You know, kids grow the kids with autism grow just like we do. They go through puberty. They go through trials and tribulations. They experience things that are going to affect their behavior and affect how they respond to different people. That relationship piece is so huge too. I mean, we don't all get along with everybody that we run into. We can't expect a child with autism to get along with every caretaker that works with them. So that relationship piece is very important. And I feel like we offer the training to our staff in order to understand the child, understand their needs, to be patient with them, to be empathetic, to be caring, understanding that parents are entrusting us with their child. They are saying, here is my child, I need help. I want you to care for him or her the best that you can. So, I mean, these are somebody's child that we're watching and we're taking care of. So, you know, we have a lot of staff that have formed great relationships with the parents, too, which I think is just fantastic.
You know, you mentioned throughout the conversation kind of several different players that are kind of involved when, you know, whether it be like the public school system or even county services. And I wonder if you can maybe kind of explain, you know, who's involved when you're talking about kind of setting up these plans for a child with cognitive or behavioral needs.
Sure. So, you know, the main players are, you know, the parents, obviously. And it's different by state. Each state is different as far as where their funding source comes from. Wisconsin, it is the county. So wherever the parent is residing, they would have a county social worker that would help them find the services that they need for that child. So they're very involved in that referral process, very involved in the enrollment process. Minnesota, it's the school and the county. Illinois, it's the school. So, I mean, each state is completely different. But it is guided by the parents. You know, the parents are really involved and really invested in what's best for that child, and the social workers are working with them to find the best care.
Sue, you mentioned that you were able to access a lot of resources through the school district in Minneapolis. I wonder if it is challenging, though, when you have multiple players, you know, whether it's the school system or county services, kind of involved in setting up this plan.
I would say for Minnesota, you really don't have much of county services until you're really looking at some pretty severe behaviors, such as which our son had. So from that sense, they really don't get involved until you're talking about accessing like a Chilita, or you may have other things going on, maybe a highly mobile or homeless child, maybe a child who's having some legal problems, been you know, we want to get them out of the jail system and put them somewhere else. At that point, you get counting services. Otherwise, it's pretty much the school. And at least through Minneapolis, they can manage a fair amount. They actually do have a federal setting for school that is a K through 12 that can actually handle kids with the worst behaviors. They were able to manage our son. Problem is that 6.5 hours a day. That's a problem then when he comes home. And you can still have, then a woman takes care of him until 7 o'clock, and then he's with one parent, and then the school bus comes at 6:30 the next morning. For a child who can't handle transitions, we basically just turned his life into one giant transition. Enter Chilita, that's gone.
Yeah, and Doug, I wonder, you have kind of experience in two different states of kind of the different players in this plan. I wonder if you mind sharing kind of more details on that.
Well, I would say we have an experience in extremes. In Texas, we were unable to find any help. There was really no organized county help. There was no organized help through the school district. There were lots of individual players as far as maybe schools or day programs or therapy centers, and they were hard to find. You had to seek them out. Many times they weren't local, so you had to take that into account. But there was no navigation of that, no help in navigating that. And coming to Wisconsin, where the county plays a big role in helping coordinate that, and much earlier than what you experienced, Sue, they got involved early and they got involved often. Now, that was overwhelming in another way, in that there were a lot of people to help, and sometimes so many people that we didn't know who did what. And so, Carrie, I think we've talked about this in the past. Being able to have somebody help tell you, here's what these different people do, and here's what their resource ability is this, and almost give you a playlist of what to do. You'll get no complaints from me from all of the help that we had. But it was overwhelming almost from another end of having so many people involved that we oftentimes couldn't figure out who we were supposed to be working with and when.
Carrie, as we move forward and look to the future, I wonder if, if there is a feeling or a need for more, I guess, consistency across states or across counties on how we, serve individuals with autism.
Well, I think it's more being understanding and know what resources are out there. You know, just like Doug said, you know, there are some people, some places have no resources. There are some that have so many, you just don't know what to choose from. So I think it's important to make sure that states are aware that there are families that are struggling and there are individuals that do need services. So what they can do to help navigate the system, I think, is important. Give the parents some guidance so they're just not shooting in the dark as far as where they're going to go to get help. And, you know, going down that wrong path is very time-consuming. It can be very financially burdening for some families, too. So if states are able to just provide a roadmap on parents so they can make their lives a little bit easier, because, you know, having a child at home who has special needs can be daunting in itself, but then having to navigate through all the different layers of the county and state can be very difficult too.
Time is important. When you've got a young child with this diagnosis, the faster you can access the services that he or she needs to start to guide them and help give them structure, and the faster that happens, the more doors that open for them down the road. And that was part of our challenge. Is we spent many years early on walking a lot of those false directions, thinking we had an answer and running into a dead end, and again, nobody to help really guide us as to where to go next. So we lost some time early on. Don't know what the outcome would have been, but I can look back and say if we'd done these things earlier, you know, I can imagine what other successes we might have had earlier on.
Well, even the wait list, too. I don't know what the wait list is now, but I always hear that there's a wait list to get on a wait list for services. So, I mean, there's wait lists after wait lists after wait lists. And like Doug said, you know, that time is very important. Early intervention is important for individuals with autism. So if more states are able to have services like Chilita or other resources available so that wait lists can go down a little bit more, would be helpful.
The Texas wait list was 13 years.
I mean, that's almost unbelievable.
Exactly what we said. And we got a letter every year that said, here's the number that your child has moved up in and wait for services.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Carrie, what do you see, very briefly as we wrap up here, what do you see for the future of your organization moving forward?
Doing what we can to provide that quality of life for individuals is so important. And it's not just individual, it's the family. It's grandparents, it's siblings, it's anything that we can do to help that family unit be a successful family unit. I mean, every family has its trial and tribulations, I get that. But in order for the families to feel comfortable with their child with special needs, so then they can have some quality family. And whatever resources we can provide, whatever training we can provide for the outcome of that family, I think is the best outcome.
Carrie Zilke, director of the Chilita Development and Learning Center, Dr. Doug Sullivan, a parent of a child with autism from La Crosse, and Susan Justman, a parent of a child with autism from Minneapolis. Join us today to talk about the challenges and opportunities for children with autism and their families. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.